Last week we spoke about how the devotee is surrendered to Krishna, or how the devotee, what it means to surrender, and how sometimes the devotee struggles, resists that surrender, resists giving up his or her independence. And we got quite deeply into that. And if you have any questions on that, feel free to ask. If you were here last week, you can ask more questions. And tonight I wanted to segue into a discussion on how Krishna reciprocates, or how Krishna surrenders to his devotee. Because it's not that Krishna's asking us to surrender and he's not reciprocating. Of course, he's always reciprocating even more than we are. But sometimes we don't realize that Krishna is surrendered to his pure devotee. Krishna is controlled by love. He's controlled by his devotee. So, to begin with, of course, the first thing I always have to check in and ask you, can you hear me loud and clear, and can you see me loud and clear? Because sometimes it freezes up, and unless you tell me, I just keep going and going and going. So please let me know if there's any problem. Everything is good. Good. Divyangi is here. Transcendental personality. So Pallavi is here, another transcendental personality. So I have said on several occasions, perhaps I even said it last week, Hare Krishna Pallavi, perhaps I even said it last week, that Srila Prabhupada said one of the meanings of the Maha Mantra is, Krishna, please accept me. That is what a devotee is feeling, or one of the many things a devotee is feeling when he or she is chanting. Hare Krishna Divyangi. So, Prabhupada said something that I didn't tell you. And he said that Krishna is also thinking when you're chanting or saying to you, please accept me. Now, isn't that interesting? From our perspective, we are asking Krishna to accept us because we have turned our back on Krishna and we have become conditioned to forget him. We have become envious of him. We are trying to compete with him. And so naturally for us, when we come to Krishna consciousness and that seed of desire for bhakti is planted in our heart, we're asking Krishna to accept us because we've left him. And so you may wonder, why would Krishna ask us to accept him? And it's interesting because if you remember what we were speaking about last week, we were speaking about our resistance to surrender. So I think this fits in very well with that discussion, in that Krishna is saying, please accept me. And on some level, we have doubts, or we may have doubts. Should I accept Krishna? Should I give up my independence? Should I really give myself to Krishna? Can I trust him? Will I be happy? All these considerations are there, and we had discussed them last night. And now, Krishna is saying, accept me. So, in a sense, what Krishna is saying is, I know you have doubts, I know you have reservations, I know you have resistance, but please accept me. So Krishna, he's offering himself, and he's asking the devotee to accept him. That's very amazing. We also discussed how the holy name is Nam Avatar, Nam Prabhu, Avatar. And that Krishna is coming to us very easily. So he's giving himself. Just think about this, that who would you give yourself to? We're very careful who we give ourselves to, who we put our faith in. And Krishna is willing to give himself to anyone who chants his name. So Krishna is controlled by the affection of the devotee, and he thrives on that affection. He wants it so much. And in the Gita, he asks us to give that affection to him, not only because it's good for us, it will make us happy, and it will ultimately free us from material existence, but because he wants it, his heart wants it, he needs it. He needs, in a sense, the affection of everyone, because we're all his sons and daughters, we're all connected. So I wanted to read some things from the Gita today that that elaborate on this point. And I think that often we don't look at things from Krishna's point of view. And it's very nice to look at things from his point of view. We're used to looking at things from our point of view, right? And so when we look at things from our point of view, we may look at Krishna perhaps in a fearful way. Well, maybe if I am not perfect, Krishna will harm me in some way, or he won't like me, or he'll punish me, or I will offend him. And so we don't often look at Krishna's heart and how he shows his affection to his devotee. So I think it's a very important thing for us to do. Don't just look at our relationship with Krishna, but look at his relationship with us and how our actions affect him and affect his heart. We've talked about this a little bit, but not extensively. So, okay, Divyanga has a question. So before we continue any further, we'll take the question. Krishna is complete by himself. Okay, I have to open up this. Yes, it's a good question. How do we understand that he needs the love of a devotee? What a nice question. And that reveals the nature of Krishna. Krishna is complete. He doesn't need anything material. And nothing material will make him happy. But Krishna needs love. He's Rasaraj, the king of relationship, the king of sweet exchange. So he thrives on that. That's his life. That's his blood and breath and everything. So that is Krishna. So it's a very good question, because it helps us understand the nature of Krishna. Krishna thrives on the affection of his devotee, and also the devotee thrives on the affection of Krishna. Just like you could say that Srila Prabhupada, not that you could say, we say Srila Prabhupada is a pure devotee, is fully Krishna conscious, fully satisfied within himself. But at the same time, he's hankering to increase his devotional service, to increase his affection for Krishna, hankering for the mercy of Krishna, hankering for the mercy of his guru. So that's transcendental. And so that's natural as a spiritual emotion, to feel this intense affection and to hanker for it and want to taste more of it. That's natural in spiritual life. So spiritual life is just a reflection of material life. So we're not hankering after anything material, but the soul is hankering for relationship with the Supreme Soul, because we're eternally connected. So Krishna, you see Krishna's nature, is that he's hankering after the love of his devotees, and he's hankering to give the love of his devotees. And sometimes Krishna says his devotee is so dear, he would lop off his own arm for the devotee. He has that much affection. So that's the heart of Krishna. So as devotees, we want to understand Krishna's heart. And that way we can appreciate how much he wants a relationship with us. Even though we, in our present state, may not be very Krishna conscious, but potentially, or on the pure level, we are Krishna conscious. And so that's what Krishna is seeing. He's seeing the full potential that can manifest in our pure state in that relationship. So you may not understand it completely, it may not make sense materially, but it does show Krishna's heart. And so in that sense, it's the question helps us penetrate the nature of Krishna. Because we don't often, as I was saying, we don't often think of it. Or maybe we don't think of it enough. We just think of our relationship to him, but not his relationship to us. Or we may think of his relationship to us in the sense of a punisher God or a controller God, but not in terms of intimate relation. But that's really, that's Krishna. And that's the highest aspect of God, is that intimacy, that love. And that also, that's also why even in the material world, we all hanker for love and we all believe love is the highest. It's the highest, it offers the highest pleasure, the deepest gratification. And just like we know, children, if they don't get love, they can't live. Babies cannot live without affection. So Krishna is like that. He can't live without affection. He thrives on the affection of his devotees, and they thrive on his affection. So, nice, isn't it? So I'm going to... Does that answer your question, Divyangi? If not, you can ask... You can ask more, and we can discuss that. It's another time Srila Prabhupada said, when you're chanting, then you're calling Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So Krishna comes, and he says, yes, you're calling, what do you want? So he's ready, Krishna's ready to come to the devotee. What do you want? And he's hoping that the devotee wants him. And Krishna's ready to facilitate the relationship in so many ways. So he's ready to give himself. He's ready to fulfill our desires in relationship to developing our relationship with him. He's ready to fulfill any desire we have which will bring us closer to him. That's all he wants. And that's what makes him happy. So when we are advancing in spiritual life, then that makes Krishna happy. I know often, or devotees think, or many devotees think, that how can I, in my conditioned state, make Krishna happy? But when Krishna sees that you're making progress in Krishna consciousness, however little it might be, that makes him happy. Little baby steps, and he's happy. See that you're coming closer. You may think, well, of course, it's not the happiness that the gopis can give Krishna. Okay, it's not. But still, it gives Krishna pleasure. So that means that potentially, by our advancing in Krishna consciousness, by our thinking of Krishna, by doing any kind of devotional service, we can give Krishna pleasure on the level that we're becoming purified. And that means coming a little bit closer to Krishna, coming a little bit closer to reestablishing the eternal connection. And that makes Krishna happy, because that's what he wants. And any time we render service to Krishna, and that service is done with purity, with pure intention, pure motivation, that satisfies Krishna, because that's what ultimately Krishna wants. Okay, so... this very nice verse, a set of verses in the Gita, and we're going to discuss it, and it shows, it reveals how Krishna surrenders to his devotee, how Krishna serves his devotee. And we'll begin with verse 62. If you have Gita, this is the 18th chapter, verse 62. And in this verse, Krishna is telling Arjuna, just take refuge of him. And of course, him is Krishna. But he's speaking in the third person. Take refuge of him with all your heart. And by his grace, you will attain the supreme abode and eternal peace. So, or the eternal abode and supreme peace. Now, officially here, Bhagavad Gita is over. Everything has been said. And in the next verse, Krishna tells Arjuna, I've explained everything that you need to know. So you deliberate on it, and then you decide what you do, what you wish to do. Tata tasi, tata kuru. What is that Sanskrit? Yachetasi, tata kuru. It's actually yachetasi, tata kuru. Decide what you want to do. Deliberate on the instructions I've given you. And then decide what you want to do, and then do that. So, in other words, Krishna is giving Arjuna independence. Do what you want. I've given you these instructions. You're independent. Make your choice. And then so everything has been said. The Gita is finished. But the interesting thing is now, in verse 64, the Gita is over, but there's more verses. So that you might think, well, if Krishna said everything, if the Gita is over, then why are there more verses? And so listen to what Krishna says. Listen once again to my most important instruction, the most secret of all. You are dear to me, therefore I shall say what is best for you. So in other words, what's going on here? Krishna is telling Arjuna, Sarva guyatamam, I'm going to tell you the most secret thing. But the thing is, he's already told him it. He's already told it, but he's going to tell it again. And why? Well, as I said in the previous verse, Krishna said, do what you want to do. And now Krishna's thinking, but I don't want Arjuna to make the wrong decision. So I've just told him, do what you want to do. So it's like, your child grows up, they're 18, 19, 20, they're going to college. They're not going to just do whatever you tell them. They're on their own now. So they're going away, and you say, okay, you know, this is what I advise you to do, but it's your choice, you're an adult now, you have to decide for yourself. So as the father or the mother is saying that, then they're thinking in their mind, I hope my child doesn't make bad decisions. I so much want them to make the right decision. I so much want them to do what I've instructed them to do or what they've learned from me throughout their life. That's what I want them to do. And so those kind of Krishna's in the same position because he's telling Arjuna, okay, I've instructed you, now you decide what you want to do. I'm giving you this independence, I always do. And then he says, but listen again to this most important instruction. This is the Sarva Guyatamam, the most secret of all the instructions, the most secret. And I want to tell you this because you're dear to me. So now Krishna is, he's serving Arjuna in this way. He doesn't want to let him go into Maya. And then what is the verse that Krishna speaks? Well, it's an interesting verse. The reason it's interesting is because he's speaking a verse he's already spoken. So if we go back to the point that the parents are instructing the children throughout their lives, and when the children become adults, they're on their own, then the parent might want to reiterate what they consider the most important or most essential or most powerful instruction. And that's what Krishna's doing here. He said, I'm going to give you the most confidential instruction. And he's repeating a verse almost verbatim that he spoke in the ninth chapter. Does anybody know what that verse is, how it starts? Anyone have an idea? He's saying, again, I want to give you... once again, let me say something to you. Just trying to emphasize this point. Anybody know? Take a guess what the verse is? Any pundits out there, scholars? There are two verses in the Bhagavad Gita that are almost identical. One is in the 9th chapter and one is in the 18th chapter. There's only one change in the wording at the end. That is the last verse of chapter 9. And that is the 65th verse of chapter 18. Man mana bhava mad bhakto. Sharada, remember? I think we were singing this verse at your home when we were chanting those Bhagavad Gita verses. Man mana bhava mad bhakto. Madjiji mam namaskuru. Mame vaishyasi yuktvaivam atmanam aparayanaha. I was at Sharada's house and somebody put a keyboard in front of me, and so I started singing Bhagavad Gita shlokas, like popular ones. This is one, yes. Man mana bhava madbhakto. Always think of me, bhava madbhakto, become my devotee. Man mana bhava madbhakto, madjiji, worship me. Namaskuru, offer obeisances unto me. Mam evaishasi yuktaivam atmanam aparayana. You will come to me, the surrendered soul, atma parayana, who worships me, will come to me. So Krishna's saying, think of me, become my devotee, worship me, offer your obeisances to me, or obeisance, and you will come to me. Now, one change in the last verse. The last line is, instead of atmanam aparayana, he says, pratijani priyosi me. But I don't want to leave you and get up. Because if anybody tunes in, they'll be seeing a blank screen. Well, they'll be seeing a sofa. So, pratijani priyosime. So in this verse, Krishna says, mam evaishyasi, same thing. He said, I'll read it. Manmana bhavamat bhakto majji mam namaskuru. Same exact thing. Mam evaishyasi, same thing, but mam evaishyasi yuktvaivam, it changes to mam evaishyasi satyam te. Pali, I know you'd tell me to go get some water. Or if it gets really bad, I'll get water. But I think I can make it. Mam evaishyasi, instead of yuktvainam, satyam te. Satyam means truth. You will come to me. Satyam te. Okay. Yes. Satyam means truth. So here, Krishna says, mam evaishyasi, you'll come to me. Satyam te, I'm telling you the truth. Pratijani priyosi me. I promise. Why? Priyosi me, because you're very dear to me. Interesting. Krishna's now here making a promise, a guarantee in this verse. Why? Because he so much wants his devotee to come back to him. Have you ever heard Srila Prabhupada say that Krishna wants us to go back to him more than we want to go? That's kind of a deplorable situation, isn't it? It should be the other way around. In other words, we offended him, and so we are the ones who will benefit the most, so we should want to go more, right? I mean, we're the ones who are having the trouble. Krishna's not having trouble. But because of his love, his affection, because it's that affection is so strong and so intense, he's now making a promise to Arjuna. You can trust me, I promise. You are dear to me, and I will bring you back to me. Now, why is this interesting? Why is this interesting? Well, let us read. This is from Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami is considered the greatest philosopher that ever lived, at least from the Indian perspective. Jiva Goswami says, well, Hold on a second. Okay, Jiva Goswami says, comments, that while in chapter 9 Krishna spoke of his devotees' love for him, here he speaks more of his love for his devotees. Out of immense love for Arjuna, Krishna promises him, his dear friend, that he will attain him. Arjuna will attain Krishna because Krishna loves him, and here Krishna begs Arjuna, please believe me. Krishna is very eager to impart the instruction in this verse to Arjuna, his eyes full of tears of love for his devotee. With folded hands, he instructs Arjuna, honestly pleading with him. By using the word mom, Krishna tells Arjuna repeatedly, that the promise he makes in the second half of this verse applies to those who worship him exclusively, not any other form of himself. This is his vow. He can be trusted. In other words, if you worship me in my personal form, then you can trust me. I promise you will come to me. Because Krishna wants us to come. And we are not maybe as interested as he is, and maybe we have doubts that it's the best thing. Well, I'm not sure I want to go. I'm not really sure about this relationship. I'm not sure if I'm ready to commit. I'm not sure it's going to work out. I'm not sure that I'm ready to give up what I'm doing now in my life. So we have all these reservations. And Krishna's saying, no, just, it's okay. I'll take you out of this world. What an offer. That's an offer we should not refuse. Not only does Krishna want Arjuna to know his love for him, he also wants him to believe that in spite of everything he has said, one can attain perfection by simply accepting his love. This is important. After all that Krishna has said about spiritual practice and attainment, this may seem hard to believe. Thus Krishna feels compelled to make a solemn promise. At this point, all of his other instructions are superseded. In other words, Krishna has given so many instructions in the Gita, do this, do that, perform your duty, do austerity, be self-controlled, so on and so forth. And now, Krishna is saying, just become a bhakta. That's all you have to do, and I'll take you. That's it. Believe me. Believe me when I say this. This is all you have to do. I know I've given so many instructions. There's jnana, there's yoga, there's sankhya, there's karma yoga. So many things I've instructed. But here, just love me. That's all I want. And I'll take care of everything. You don't have to. You just believe me. This is it. Now, it's a really interesting point. I don't know if you understand why Krishna says satyamte, I promise. Could anybody guess why Krishna's saying I promise? Why would he have to say that? Just believe me. Why would he have to say that? Could anybody guess? Or does anybody know? Or would you like to guess? Why does Krishna have to ask Arjuna to believe him? Well, maybe you know the story that Krishna fought in the battle, but he had vowed not to fight. Yes, Pallavi, that's one reason. That's more of the external reason, giving us affirmation so we can trust him. But the reason Arjuna might not trust him or others might not trust him is that once he took a vow, he wouldn't fight. But then he broke that vow to protect Arjuna, to protect his devotee. And on another occasion, as many of you may know, if you've read Mahabharata, Krishna asked Yudhisthira to lie. Yeah, Krishna sometimes breaks his vow, yeah. You know, Krishna left Vrindavan, right? And he said, I'll be back tomorrow or the next day. And we know that didn't happen. It's sometimes said people who are from Mathura are crooked and they can't be trusted. And Krishna was born in Mathura. So, some people may doubt that you can trust Krishna. Sometimes it's said that Krishna is crooked. So, can we trust him? What a question. Of course you think, yes, we can trust him. But Krishna was present on the planet and sometimes he did things which were deceptive. That's his lila. That's his nature. So here he's saying, but this, you can trust me. You can believe me. You can have faith in me. Okay. Now. Would you like to hear another commentary? This is by Baladeva Vidyabhushan. These are great spiritual masters in the our Sampradaya, in our disciplic line. He says, Krishna tells Arjuna that although it is true that people from Mathura cannot be trusted, it is also known they will never deceive those they love. Here Krishna says, I love you. I love you, Arjuna. Trust me. Think of me always, but not like those who do so out of enmity, like Shishupala. Think of me favorably in love. Be my devotee, not only in word, but in action as well. Therefore, worship me with flowers, incense, and other such things mentioned in the scriptures. Sacrifice your life for me and offer homage unto me with your whole body prostrated. And without a doubt, you will live eternally with me. Perform this drama of love on the stage of surrender, about which I shall speak next. You like that? I'll read this one sentence again. I think it's very special. Here Krishna says, I love you, Arjuna. Trust me. In other words, when Krishna says, Satyam te pratijani priyosi me, I promise I will take you back to me because I love you. You're my very dear one, my priya. That dear one means I love you, therefore I promise I won't go back on my word. You can trust me. Yes, people from Mathura may be crooked, they may lie, but they don't lie to their friends. They don't lie to their family. So you can trust me, I won't lie. Nice, huh? This is intimate pastimes. So now, the next verse, yes, very sweet to think of how much Krishna loves us. Now, I think I should stop here and qualify this. Now, sometimes we feel that we're not really qualified for Krishna's love, that we haven't done anything to deserve it. But we have taken shelter, directly or indirectly, of Srila Prabhupada, and the Shastra says that if one serves one who's dear to Krishna, one becomes dear to Krishna. Even if one serves one who's serving one who's dear to Krishna, one becomes dear to Krishna. So we shouldn't mentally disqualify ourselves because of our own disqualification or our own personal feelings that Krishna has no reason to be affectionate to us. But any service that a devotee renders, that's accepted by Krishna. If it's done favorably, if it's done under the direction of the spiritual master, Krishna accepts that service. Krishna is pleased by that service. So, and as we've been discussing here, Krishna naturally has affection for all his parts and parcels. He can't not have affection. So there's really nothing anybody can do that would ever destroy Krishna's affection, at least in the potential sense. Krishna may not, a person may not receive Krishna's affection because they don't want it. They're not trying to get it, but Krishna's always willing to give it if they're willing to receive it. So there's nothing that you can ultimately do to disqualify yourself from Krishna's mercy other than offending Vaishnavas. But in the ordinary course of life, and you're trying to be a Vaishnava, trying to execute devotional service, you should never have doubt that you're unqualified in any way to receive Krishna's affection. It's not dependent on your particular qualification. That's just his nature, that he has that, because we're parts and parcels. So now, I thought that was important. So now, we come to the next verse. So these, as you remember from the beginning of the class, these are all verses Krishna speaking after he's already told Arjuna, do what you want, but he doesn't want to let him do what he wants. He doesn't want to let him do what he wants. Excuse me. I just put the Bhagavad Gita on my... According to Vedic authority, Krishna, Ajinkya says, Krishna is the supreme truth. Whichever place he belongs to, he is our object of surrender. That's the Krishna, a different form of Krishna. As Paramatma, yes. But here, Krishna Vrindavan, he's sometimes crooked. Different form of Krishna. Of course, you could say Krishna of Vrindavan is speaking... Krishna Paramatma speaking Bhagavad Gita, or Vasudev speaking Bhagavad Gita, but Krishna can manifest that his original form also, and he does when he speaks the next verse. But this is an intimate point. So the next, we'll explain this a little further. So the next verse, Sarva Dharmam Parityaja. And this we had discussed last week, where Krishna says, surrender unto me, give up all other religious practices, and just surrender. Sarva dharmam parityaja, mam ekam sharanam braja. Just take shelter of me. Sarva dharmam parityaja, mam ekam sharanam braja. Ham tam sarva papevyo, mukishami mashuchaha. Whatever sinful reaction that you may incur in the process of surrendering to me, I will absolve you of those reactions. Okay, so, now what does that mean in relation to the topic tonight? I will read some things, and we will discuss. How is it possible to follow Krishna's instruction in the previous verse, which is man mana bhava man bhakto? How will one overcome obstacles in the path of spiritual realization and become qualified to always think of Krishna without any other duty? What about the reactions that will come from not doing one's prescribed duties? In answer to these questions, in other words, the point's being made is that in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's talking about dharma. You know, this dharma means duty. And he's telling Arjuna, you're kshatriya, you're a warrior, you should fight. That's your duty. And then he's talking about other paths, the path of jnana, sankhya, yoga. And they're all practices which one has to do dutifully. One has to be disciplined, so forth. So now, it's like Krishna's turning everything upside down, and he's saying, you know all those paths that I spoke about in the Gita? Well, you don't have to do them. It's interesting, isn't it? But then you would think, well, why would Krishna speak those paths? Well, one of the reasons he speaks those paths is to show the relative value or the merits and demerits of each path. And then also, by doing that, he shows bhakti as the supreme path. So there's a comparison there, and then ultimately he brings it to bhakti. And then when you get to bhakti, then you realize that the other paths were just leading you to bhakti, and so if you get to bhakti, you don't really need the other paths. It's almost like he's showing you all the things you don't need. You may think, well, that's strange. Why would he do that? But again, it shows the superiority of bhakti. So let me give you an example from my younger days when I was an aspiring musician, guitar player who wanted to be a famous rock and roll star. But not a very good disposition for becoming a Vaishnava. I wasn't that interested in becoming a rock and roll star, but you know, the seed was there. So I like to play guitar, and guitar players like to buy good guitars and save all their hard-earned money and spend it all on guitars. So I saved my hard-earned money when I was 16 to buy a guitar, an acoustic guitar, steel string acoustic. So in the music store that I would shop, which I believe was exclusively guitars, they had a room in which you would go in, which was very acoustically favorable to hear the guitar. The guitar sounded fantastic. When you leave the store, your guitar is never going to sound as good as it sounded in that room, unless you're in a recording studio with a very expensive microphone. So, but his trick was interesting, and it was similar to what Krishna did. What he did was, you'd pick a guitar, and then he would bring in like five other guitars, all better than the guitar you picked. You think, why are you bringing in all these guitars? I picked this guitar. He wanted to show the relative difference. So you know, I picked the $250 guitar, and he'd bring the $500 and the $1,000 and the $2,000. He said, you know, play this guitar, then play this one, then play, now go back and play yours. And by the time you play yours, you think, this guitar doesn't sound as good as it sounded when I first played it. So we could look at Krishna's instructions, not exactly like this, but you know, is it comparative? Okay, here's one instruction, here's another. But listen to this guitar, the bhakti guitar. Oh, isn't that sweet? And if you just have this bhakti guitar, it's better than all those five other guitars put together. So anyway, it's an interesting way of presenting a teaching, but also the ultimate teaching is bhakti. And if you get that, you've got everything. So we were reading and said, the devotee may be thinking, what are the reactions that will come from not doing one's prescribed duties? In answer to these questions, Krishna speaks this verse. He says, I shall take care of any reactions that may accrue from abandoning one's superficial religious duty. In other words, superficial religious duty, it means anything which is not pure bhakti, pure devotional service. It may be some kind of ritual, samskara, puja, whatever, but anything which is not pure devotional service, you can give it up. And Krishna says, don't worry. There'll be no reaction. I'll protect you from the reaction. So then you might be thinking, but I'm not sure about that. That's what Krishna is addressing here. So now Krishna explains his position. This is from the commentary. I think this is from Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur. And when he writes commentaries on what Krishna says, he often adds words and says, so he's saying more than Krishna said in the Gita. He's adding a further explanation of what Krishna is saying or would say if he said more, or what he meant. So he's expanding on what Krishna means. So he goes on to say here, in this verse, Krishna is saying, I shall take care of any reactions that may accrue from abandoning one's superficial religious duty. I have the power to do this. So therefore, Krishna is allaying one's fears. Okay, well, how is that possible? Well, I can do that. I have the power to do that. I mean, I made the rules. So I can break them. I can do what I want. I am the source of all religious injunctions. I am eminently qualified, and on the strength of my qualifications, you too will become qualified. In other words, Krishna is saying, I can change the rules, I can free you from the reaction, and I can qualify you or empower you to achieve pure bhakti without fear or anxiety that you've broken any other principle, which are all just lesser guitars. When you have the $3,000 guitar, you don't need the lesser guitar. This verse represents Krishna's special love for his devotees. Isn't that interesting? I think many of us, when we read this verse, we don't think of it as Krishna's special love. Krishna says, I'll free you from all sinful reactions. Just surrender to me. You don't have to worry about anything else. I never really, before I was reading these commentaries, I never really meditated on it. I mean, I understood it was Krishna's mercy, but I didn't really think of it in terms of his affection for his devotee. So it's a nice meditation when we read this verse or hear about this verse to see that this is actually Krishna's mercy. Let's continue reading here about Krishna's affection for his devotees. Of course, Okay, let me say one thing about guitars, or about anything. Everything can be used in Krishna's service, and anything we can get attached to. So use it in Krishna's service and don't get attached. And if you get too attached, then you can send your guitar to me, because I'm so detached. Okay. So here Jiva Goswami says, Jiva Goswami comments that some people think the Bhagavad Gita suggests many different spiritual paths. To this, Sri Jiva, this is Jiva Goswami, replies that Krishna teaches higher and lower paths in the Gita to help persons distinguish one from the other, but that the concluding portion of a book represents its essence. So we're reading here the 18th chapter, the last verses. Overcoming fear and becoming free from worry is the subject of the Gita's opening lines. You know, in the beginning, Arjuna was in anxiety, and Krishna said, you know, you're worrying for no reason. You know, you don't need to be in anxiety. That was the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. And here Krishna says, don't worry, echoing his first words to Arjuna. Isn't that interesting? So the very thing he began speaking to Arjuna, saying, don't worry. And then he said, in the last verse, don't worry. Pallavi, it may go on the internet, so we don't have to wait that long. I'll let everybody know if the CD goes on the internet. We're just now working on, I have to stop because I have to tell you another story. This is a great story, and it's worth hearing. I like it. So here's a story. I started working on a CD in 2001, and I wanted to spend a lot of time on it because I'd worked on other CDs and I wasn't satisfied because I didn't spend sufficient amount of time. So I set up my own studio so I could have time. So, you know, over the years I'd work on it in my spare time. And as I became more involved in teaching, I worked on it less and less. So I started in 2001, now we're in 2011, and I'm finally doing the mixes, right? So there, I had one song, and it begins with the prayers of Queen Kunti, just one prayer. And the prayer is, as the Ganges forever flows unto the sea, may my attraction be drawn unto you without, may my attraction be drawn unto you without diversion for anyone else, something like that. May my attraction be drawn on. Oh, may my attraction be drawn unto you, my Lord. To you, my Lord, and to no one else. Yeah. So it's a verse from the Bhagavatam. So it's a melody that we use for kirtan. But after I worked out the melody and the chords and everything, I began singing that verse because I liked that verse and I saw that it fit. But because it's a prayer of Kunti, I thought I should get a woman to sing. So I'm looking around at the devotee singers that I think are good, and one devotee says, you should get my sister. She's better than I am and she has more time. So we got her in the studio. And she sang that, as the Ganges forever flows unto the sea, unto the sea. May my attraction be drawn unto you, my Lord, and to no one else. She sang that, and then there was a kirtan following it. So she's in the studio, and then I said, well, now that you're here, I'll play my other songs, and we can see if you could sing on some of them, because I needed more vocals, or I would like to have more vocals. So we're going through all the songs, and there's two songs, and she says, I don't think you should put these songs in the CD. They're not that good compared to your other songs. And I said, you know, that's right. I was thinking that they're not that good. And I said, but last month I was fooling around. We have a piano in our house. I was fooling around on the piano, and I came up with this song. And it's a wonderful song. It's English and also kirtan together. They go back and forth. So I had some basic idea of words for song, but I hadn't written anything, but I had the melody down. So I played it for her, and she started singing. We said, wow, this is a good song. And I said, I know it's a good song, I really like it, but I'm just trying to finish the CD, and I don't have time. I don't have time to do the song. She said, no, we have to do the song, we have to do the song. So we worked the song out, and we discussed possible words, and she went home at night, and she came back refining the lyrics we came up with, and then again we refined them, and then we laid down a basic track of the song and listened to it, and we thought, this is a really nice song. And then we said, we should get your mother in here to play piano. So her mother came in and did some piano tracks, and we did some vocals, but I wasn't satisfied with it. So I have a friend, his name is Havi. I don't know if you know Havi, but Havi is from Venezuela, and he is one of the most famous musicians in Venezuela. If you ever meet someone from Venezuela, his name is Elon Chester, but he's a disciple of Prabhupada and a very dear godbrother of mine. So, in fact, he just won a Grammy. Last year he won a Grammy Award, or earlier this year, he won a Latin American Grammy. He's that good. So I let him hear the song, and I said, Havi, this is such a good song. Can you do the music for it? He's this incredible musician. He said, yes. So it went through. First he said, no, let my daughter do it, but she didn't do it. So then finally, like in September, I knew he was going to India in October, and I said, Havi, can you do it? So he started working on it. He said, it's in the wrong key. It's too high. So then I went back to the devotee who sang it, Krishna, and said, okay, let's see what key. So he lowered the key, and I told him it's in this key. He said, okay, I'll do it. But then this, that, and the next thing, and like the weekend before he's going to, the weekend before he's leaving to India, he's flying to Venezuela to do a concert, and then a few days later he's going to India. And then he calls me on Friday and goes, I'm in the studio working on another project. I don't think I can do your music. He said, I'll do it in India, because he has a keyboard there. And I said, no, I need to do it before I go to India. So what to do? So then I thought, we have to do something. So I took the song on B and I laid down the basic track. She came in and re-sang it. I sang it. And then many of you may know Bada Hari. I said, Bada Hari, you got to do this song. I've taken it as far as I can go. So in the last week or two, Bada Hari and I have been working on the song, and all I can say is, if any song in Krishna consciousness could get a Grammy, I think this is it. Of course, that's not a humble thing to say, but I'll say it anyway. It's such a nice song. You'll go crazy when you hear it. You'll cry tears of love. And it's a song in English about how the material world gets you down. It's so hard to find inner peace and satisfaction. But by chanting Radhe Shyam, you can transcend and solve your problems. And you have this beautiful Radhe Shyam. It's about a 10-minute song. It's just incredible. So Badahari is working on it. He's doing such a wonderful job. So that's something to look forward to. Now we have to finish up the topic. It's 9 o'clock. So that was that a good ad for the... All right, I'll give you another ad. There's a song. It's from the 7th, 10th, and 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, I am taste of water, the light of the sun. It's all those verses. Really nice song. Actually sounds like the Beatles, but anyway, I hope you like the Beatles. That's what it sounds like then. And then we have the Kunti song, which is the Kunti song as a kirtan, but it's orchestrated, so it sounds like a full orchestra. And so kirtan's never been done this way before, and I wanted to do that, so that's super special. And then I have two other songs in English, which I've never done before. There's 4.5 songs in English. Isn't that interesting? Out of 10, like 9 or 10. And I won't tell you everything anyway. You want to pre-order now? I've got this recorded. That'll be a good app. Okay, so let's finish what we were reading. Krishna reaches higher and... Jiva replies that Krishna teaches higher and lower paths in the Gita to help persons distinguish one from the other. But the concluding portion of a book represents its essence. Overcoming fear and becoming free from worry is the subject of the Gita's opening lines. Here Krishna says, "Don't worry," echoing his first words to Arjuna, where he admonished him and told him not to lament. Isn't that interesting? So here, you know, you have so many instructions in the Gita. And then right at the end, Krishna says, just think of me, become my devotee, surrender unto me, I'll protect you, you don't have to worry. This is how I show my love for you. I made the rules, I can break the rules, don't worry. It's just, there it is. And there you get the essence. Right here you get the essence. This is what religion is, this is what spiritual practice is. And then from here, you go to the Bhagavatam, and the Bhagavatam just describes pure bhakti. And in the Bhagavatam, if you understand it from this point of view, you'll see the Bhagavatam is just reciprocation between Krishna and his devotees. And then if you go further into Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's the postgraduate study, and you'll see Lord Chaitanya reciprocating with the love and affection of his devotees. And the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita, all the stories in it, are all about the affectionate dealings between Krishna and his devotees. So, if you are a devotee, becoming a devotee, want to be a devotee, then you're going to get Krishna's love. He's going to shower it upon you, and he already is, and you just have to accept it. And that's and just so it's nice, because if you look at surrender, not so much as giving up, but look at it as getting. You're receiving. Surrender means you're receiving Krishna's love. You're opening your heart to Krishna's love. I find in my own life many times I feel it. Sometimes my heart is closed, and like Krishna wants to get in, but I'm closing it, or I'm making conditions, and just kind of open it up and say, okay, Krishna, whatever it is you want from me, I open my heart, I want to be an instrument in your service, and then Krishna can just come in and guide you in his service to you. And it's just, it's so much better than fighting with him, don't you think? Isn't that a better idea? I think so. You don't want to fight with Krishna. You can't win anyway. So, does anyone have any questions before we go? Now, Pallavi, the CD could be called Radhe Shyam, and it could be called Mahatman Friends, because I have like 15 other devotees who worked with me on this project over the years. So you'll have to look for any of those three names. We Are Forever is the title of one song. So, it is 9:05, all is well, and thank you for coming, and Hopefully we can accept Krishna's, be recipients of Krishna's love, and he'll be happy with us. We'll be happy with ourselves. Okay? We will, now, as far as next week, I'm going to India next Wednesday. So next Tuesday night, if for some reason I need to go in the studio to finish the music or whatever, we won't be able to have it. Maybe I'll just come here and say goodbye. I can't do it. Or I'll send out a message if I can't do it. But we will try. Something came up. I have to spend the whole day tomorrow doing something. So that's an extra day that I didn't anticipate. So thank you all for attending. And we will be in touch when I go to Mayapur. And we will see once we can, if we can get a good connection, then we can do some classes there. Hare Krishna.